Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 119. Using hypnosis and EMDR to repair broken maternal infant bonds. November 17, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
Lightly hypnotize a mother, and we have her go back to the things around the birth of her child that were bothering her, and we say, why don't you just clean up that stuff and remove it from your heart? And when that's accomplished, your index finger will start floating. And you don't have to put a person into a very deep hypnotic state. It might only take a minute to tell them to close their eyes and go inside and go back to the events around the birth of their child. And within a short period of time, their index finger will start floating involuntarily. And then you say, good, now go over to this other thing that was bothering you and clean that up as well. And that'll happen. Their index finger will float again. And then you say, now, anything else in there that's got to get cleaned up, just go ahead and do it.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Tony Madrid. Tony Madrid, PhD, is the director of Russian River Counselors. He's been a psychologist in Sonoma County, California for 35 years, starting as a child psychologist for Sonoma County Mental Health. He was the director of the Erickson Institute in Santa Rosa, California. He directed the inpatient program at Pocket Ranch Institute in Geyserville, California, which was an alternative program to traditional hospitalization. He has been on the faculty of the University of San Francisco for 25 years, and he was a member of the California's Board of Psychology. He's also a fellow of the International Society for the Study of Dissociation. His area of research is maternal infant bonding and childhood asthma, for which he received the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis Hilgard Award for Scientific Excellence in Writing on Pediatric Adolescent Use of Hypnosis. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Tony Madrid, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you.
Well, it's good to talk to you again after such a long hiatus. I think it's been about 30 years since we did some work together on hypnosis.
Yeah, I think it has been. I remember you used to come up to my office and teach me how to hypnotize people.
Yeah, boy.
And at that time, there were only two people that I could learn hypnosis from. One was you down at Sonoma State, and the other one was a bartender over at a local bar.
Wow. Well, I sure am glad you chose me instead of the bartender. Who knows where your career would have gone if you'd gone with him. Might have gone right down the tubes. Instead, it's gone nothing but straight up. Now, I recently interviewed Dr. Francine Shapiro for my other podcast series, Wise Counsel, and she sent on EMDR, and she sent me a couple of her books in preparation for that interview. And imagine my surprise when I discovered a really fine article in the volume that she edited on family therapy by one Dr. Antonio Madrid, and it was about using EMDR for repairing broken maternal infant bonds.
Yeah, I was really surprised that she was interested in my work. As it happened, a number of people at my office went up to Gualala in a special EMDR training that she had up there, and she had some real hotshots. She had Van de Kolk come over from Harvard and do part of it. And during the course, some of the people at my office were talking about the work that we were doing with maternal infant bonding and asthma. And so she asked me to come up and talk to her about it, and was quite interested in that kind of stuff.
Well, that's great.
We found out that, excuse me.
Go ahead.
We found out that the approach that we were using hypnosis to repair bonding to help kids with asthma was also amenable to EMDR, and in some places even preferable.
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to want to talk to you about that. In fact, there are a bunch of things I want to focus on in our conversation. I want us to touch on maternal bonding, hypnosis, EMDR, and your work on the treatment of asthma. So let's get started with maternal infant bonding. First of all, how did you come to get interested in that?
Around 1977, my wife was having a baby, and her pediatrician, her OBGYN, gave her the book Maternal Infant Bonding to read by Klaus and Kennel. They were both pediatricians at Case Western Reserve. And my wife said that she didn't need a book to learn how to bond with the baby. She just needed the space to do it. And so I read the book, and I was absolutely amazed at the stuff that Klaus and Kennel pointed out. They started looking at animal studies that showed that if there is separation at birth, there is a limited likelihood that a mother will accept the baby. In fact, if a baby lamb is taken away from its mom for just a couple of hours and then returned to the mom, about 50% of the ewes will just reject the lamb. And if the period of time is longer than that, there's a greater likelihood that the mothers will reject their babies. And what they did was say that humans also are subjected to the same type of laws, and pointed out that if a baby is taken away from its mom at birth and not returned during a sensitive period of time, that there's a real limited likelihood that the mother will bond to the baby. And, of course, animals will reject their babies, but moms just can't do it. But there'll be a number of behaviors that you'll observe in these mothers. And they did a bunch of studies to show that mothers who are separated from their babies at birth will be less affectionate, will breastfeed for shorter periods of time, will have greater incidence of abuse and failure to thrive and neglect, and have a number of other things occur to them. For example, they did a study, and they had a group of moms who had the normal kind of contact, which is the baby is shown to the mom and then brought over to the nursery and then brought back for small periods of time, as compared to an extended contact group. These mothers had their babies for a longer period of time without interruption, and they compared these children and mothers for about 5 years. They showed that the mothers were able to have easier interactions with their babies while they were waiting for pediatricians. They observed them. The mothers asked their children questions rather than demanded things. The children were able to play by themselves more easily. When the mothers went into the pediatrician, the mothers wouldn't let the babies go. The extended contact mothers, they would want to hang on to their babies while the pediatricians were examining them. And they asked the mothers some questions. They said, if your baby is crying and you burped it and looked for pins and looked to see if the baby's clean and still cries, what would you do? The extended contact mothers said, I'd pick the baby up and carry it around. The mothers who had less contact at birth said they'd let the baby cry itself to sleep.
Fascinating.
They gave IQ tests to these children when they were 5 years old, and the greater contact babies had significantly higher IQs. So there's been a lot of research that shows if the baby is taken away from the mother, that they, during a sensitive period of time, which is right after birth, the chances are that the mother will not bond. And then Klaus and Kennel did a real incredible discovery. They said humans are able not only to be physically separated from their babies, but also emotionally separated.
Now, wouldn't psychoanalytic theory come into play here too? I mean, isn't a lot of later psychoanalytic thought revolve around the whole concept of bonding?
There sure is. And that psychoanalytic thought comes in with attachment theory and Bowlby's work.
Yes.
What Klaus and Kennel point out is that if the mother is having an emotion that is incompatible with bonding, the chances are that she won't bond, such as if a mother's father just died, if the mother has gone through some traumatic experience, which was how Francine Shapiro got interested in this, if the mother is undergoing some emotion that's so intense that it blocks out bonding, then the chances are the mother's not going to be able to bond. And then following what you said, his thought is that bonding is an event that occurs in the mother, whereas attachment is something that's applied to the child.
Oh, that's not a distinction I was familiar with. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a new distinction that he brings out. And he says, and I think it's true, that bonding problems will result in behaviors and emotions that are not necessarily diagnosable according to DSM standards, whereas, of course, attachment problems are diagnosable.
So it's very curious that the way that you got into this was your wife's impending pregnancy and you reading the book that she didn't want to read.
That's it.
But at what point did this then become important to your clinical practice? Evidently, you made some kind of cognitive leap at some point.
It was totally accidental, David. I had a patient bring her daughter in who was 7 years old, and she was a severe asthmatic. She was on regular courses of steroids. She was on bronchodilators, rescue medication. She used to show up in the emergency room once or twice a month, just really severely asthmatic. And I tried to hypnotize the girl, and she would get relief during the session, but afterwards she would return to being fully asthmatic. I continued to see the mother for counseling, and during the course of that time, I taught her how to use hypnosis, and we used it for emotional issues. And then one day she said, you know, my daughter's really sick, and I have a lot of trouble with her, but the thing that bothers me the most is that I don't even like her. I don't have any emotions for her. Mm. Well, I had just read the book by Klaus and Kennel, and that's one of the things that Klaus and Kennel point out, that mothers who don't bond just don't feel like they love their child. So I said to her, what happened during the child's birth? And she said, oh boy, it was just horrible. My husband left during pregnancy, bingo, you know, emotional trauma.
Yes.
My mother was there in the labor room berating me during labor. The nurse was a real abusive nurse. I didn't have my regular OBGYN. He was on vacation. They had to bring somebody else in. It was very uncomfortable. And when the baby was born, it was jaundiced and kept away from me for a period of time. And eventually I went home and they kept the baby in the hospital. And when I came to pick the baby up, they gave me the baby, and the thought occurred to me, are you sure this is my baby? I don't have any feelings. So it was real clear that there was a bonding problem, a serious bonding problem. So working just on the possibility that we might be able to do something, I hypnotized her and asked her to remove all of the traumas and bad memories and feelings, which she did. And then I said, now let's create a new birth. And she was able to put together a picture of a new birth. And I said, good. Then let's have your unconscious mind agree to work on this new birth and keep it as part of your emotional history. So that was the last we thought of that until about 3 months later when she was leaving therapy. She said, remember the time that we did that hospital stuff? And I didn't know what she was talking about. And I said, no. And she said, remember, we went and cleaned up my baby's birth and then put in a new birth? I said, yeah. She says, well, a couple of things happened. The first is that my daughter's asthma disappeared that day. And I said, what do you mean it disappeared? She says, no more wheezing, no more wheezing at night, no more asthma medication. She can play now without wheezing. She says the asthma's gone. It only came back once when she was shipped over to see her father for a weekend, and it came back on, and he phoned and said, our daughter's wheezing, and I told him to bring the daughter right back, and as soon as she got back home, the wheezing stopped. She says, no more asthma. She says, but the thing that's most surprising is that from that day on, I loved my daughter, and now I know what it feels like to love my daughter. So I thought, you know, that was a process that took maybe 20 minutes. And in that 20 minutes, there was such a dramatic change in the physical state of the daughter and the emotional state of the mother.
Now, how do you account for that? I mean, that almost sounds magical. Something shifted in the mother, and immediately the daughter gets better.
I haven't got the slightest clue of what's really working. If you look at asthma as some type of an allergic response, it means that the immune system of the child is in jeopardy. And if the immune system is responsive to stress, what other stress is more salient than the stress of not being loved by your mother?
Mm-hmm. And somehow,
so I think it might...
And somehow at an unconscious level, she picked up on that shift in her mother's emotional attitude towards her.
That's exactly it. Somehow at a level beyond what we can see, she was able to pick that up.
And that's something that's been replicated in your subsequent work, I gather.
Well, we started shaking the bushes and pulling all the kids we could find with asthma who were current clients in the place I was working, and applied the same kind of treatment to them. And in almost every case, there was an event or events that impacted bonding. And once those events were cleaned up and a new birth was created in the mother's imagination, the child's asthma dissolved. And we were so surprised by this that we started doing a study of the incidence of non-bonding within an asthma population. And these were small samples, like 30, 40 children. But in three studies, we showed that there's at least a 70% incidence of non-bonding within children who have asthma, as compared to maybe 20 to 24% of children who don't have asthma. So that's an enormous percentage of children who are suffering from not being bonded to their mothers. If all of them are treatable, I don't know. But it's borne out by a lot of other kinds of psychoanalytic and psychological literature. From the very beginning of the psychological study of children with asthma, the psychoanalysts would say that it is the cry of the unloved child for his mother. And all kinds of research shows that mothers of children with asthma are... And this is horrendous that mothers are blamed, but are distant, are angry, are cold. Surprisingly, however, these same mothers who might be distant or cold to the asthmatic child can be very warm and loving to other children. So it's not something that's a characteristic of the mother, but a characteristic of the interaction.
Yes, and in fact, your subsequent work has revealed that there are things that can happen around birth that can interfere with that bonding process. And so those things might happen in relation to the birth of one child, but not the birth of some of their other children. So maybe you could describe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So describe for our listeners some of the sorts of things that can interfere with bonding.
Well, if you take the physical separation, the things that can interfere are any kind of hospital procedure which takes the child away from its mother right after birth. And of course, during your and my times, this was the standard procedure. Mm-hmm. This is your baby. They take the baby and they put him into the nursery. Because of Klaus and Kennel, who revolutionized birthing processes, children now have rooming in and birth centers and those kinds of things. If a child goes into an intensive care nursery, there is a limited likelihood that the mother will bond to the child. If the mother is anesthetized during birth, if it's a C-section, if the mother is very ill and unable to attend to her baby, if the baby is born very ill and the mother doesn't have access to the baby, if the child is a twin or triplet, it's likely that she will not be able to bond to one of them. If a child is adopted, of course. Now, David, Klaus is quick to say that if those things happen at birth, the mother, who is resilient, can still bond with her baby given the right amount of time and given the right environment.
Okay.
But the likelihood goes down if those kinds of things occur at or around birth that separates the baby from the mom. The second way that bonding can be interfered with is through emotional separation. And emotional separation is just really simple. It means that the mother is going through some traumatic event in her life where she can't have bonding emotions. So if a mother's, somebody in the family just died, let me give you an example. If somebody in the family just died, if the mother is ripped to another community and is away from her support group, if there is if there are problems in the marriage, if the father is giving the mother a lot of trouble for one reason or another, if the mother doesn't want the baby, let me give you an example. There was a lady that I was seeing 30 years ago who said one day, "I have to rush home because my son is sick." And I asked, "What was he sick with?" And she says, he's got asthma and he's having an attack right now. And I said, "Tell me about his birth." She said, "The birth was fine. Everything was really good." And I said, "Well, is there any death in the family?" And she said, "Oh, yes." She says, "I had a baby die about 6 months before we conceived this baby." So we took her back to the time of the birth, to the pregnancy, and had her remove all of the grief in her heart from the death of the first baby and had her feel what it was like to go through her pregnancy with joy. And then she had the baby with joy and bring it right up to the present time. That was on a Friday. It took about 15 minutes. Honest to God, it's so quick. It took about 15 minutes. So she phoned on Monday and she said, "I couldn't phone over the weekend because the office was closed, but that night my kid's asthma disappeared." She says, "And I'm looking out the window right now at him playing soccer. And it's the first time in his life that he's been able to play soccer and be healthy. He's not wheezing or anything."
Tony, that's incredible. You must have felt so gratified.
Exactly. And it was so surprising. I think that mothers and their babies are meant to attach. They're almost like Velcro.
Yes.
And if the impediments to bonding are erased, the baby just slaps right on the mom and the mom slaps right on him.
Right. Now, I think it was remarkable in that very first case that you shared with us that the mother was even able to tell you that she didn't love her baby, since there would be such a social stigma to admitting something like that generally. So she must have had a lot of trust in you, I think, to even share that.
I was so pleased that she could acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is so much. You know, the thing that bothers me about most of the psychological stuff that goes on with asthma and mothers is that the mothers are blamed for the asthma in their children. Anytime a psychological report comes out, that's what it says. When in fact, according to our studies, it's an absolute accident.
That's just like in the history of the thinking on schizophrenia and autism. Both of those have a history of mothers having been blamed in a similar way.
Absolutely, the schizophrenogenic mother.
Yep.
Well, you know, David, about 20 years ago, there were some articles about the asthmatogenic mother.
Uh-huh.
And there was some studies done at the Children's Asthma Research Institute in Denver. And they got kids over to the hospital in Denver from around the country, and they found that these children had a remission in their asthma almost as soon as they went into the hospital. And so they thought maybe this has something to do with the environment. And they asked the mothers to send their bedding without washing them and send all the dander and the stuff from the dogs, send it all. It didn't matter. When the kids showed up in the hospital, their asthma went away. And so they said it must have something to do with the parents, and especially the mother. And so they developed the term the asthmatogenic mother. Well, what we're finding out is that this lack of bonding is totally accidental. I know in California, accidents really don't occur.
Yeah, <we're> gonna...
But the father dies, somebody else in the family dies, there's separation at birth, totally accidental. And because of these accidents at birth, the bonding is disrupted.
Okay, so when that happens, I imagine there's certain sets of symptoms that you tend to see in mothers who haven't bonded, certain sets of symptoms that you'd see in the children of mothers who didn't bond with them, and perhaps even symptoms that you see in adult children later on. Maybe you could cover those three sets.
Absolutely, absolutely. The mothers who don't bond will feel less attached to their children, will feel that there's something wrong with their child. I used to remember when I was a child psychologist that mothers would come in and say, there's been something wrong with this child right from birth. And I'll say, what about your other children? She says, oh, these are all fine. But this child, I don't know, there's always been something wrong with them. He's been less demonstrative. He never would cuddle. He was colicky. And these other descriptors that Klaus and Kennel pointed out go along with mothers and children who don't bond. The mothers, interestingly enough, will overcompensate and are often seen as being controlling or domineering or over-controlling. And so what that means is that the ease of getting along with this child and protecting the child isn't there. The natural way of knowing the moves of the child isn't there. And so they have to work hard at getting along with the child. And that's the overcompensating and the controlling portion. The children will be antsy, will be pulling at their mothers. We were working with one child who was not asthmatic, but the mother came in because the child rubbed on her all the time. And she says, I just don't have any feelings for this child. The child will be at their mothers. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis. There's no... Klaus and Kennel used to talk about the dance between a mother and a child that are bonded. There's no dance. they're stepping on one another's toes. And as you point out, the characteristics of adults can be surprising. The adults will say, you know, my mother and I never got along. We're friends now, but we just didn't get along as children. And you find a lot of unbonded adults bonding to other things, David, bonding to work, bonding to drugs and alcohol, bonding to any kind of addictive behaviors. We had, this is really interesting, we had this, I used to teach at USF hypnosis, and I was teaching hypnosis and talking about bonding, and one of the ladies in the class, about 45 years old, she said, "That's how it is with my mother. We're friends now, but we never got along." And I said, "Well, what do you think went on at birth?" She said, "Oh, it's real obvious. My father was in the Second World War and was away. And he was in the out in the battlefields, and my mother was afraid he was going to die, and she was a wreck." So we went through in the adult, we went through changing the feeling of the fetus, which is her, changing the feeling of the fetus of being in a mother who was peaceful. And we went through all of that, I don't know much about bonding adults as we do about bonding kids, but nevertheless, we did it. And at the next class, the lady said, I've been real peaceful all week. I've been very, very happy, she says, but what's very surprising is that my mother phoned from back east and said, "Honey," and my mother never calls me honey, she said, "Honey, what's been going on with you?" "Why?" she says. "Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about you this week, and I've been fingering the little bracelet that you had when you were born, almost like a pair of rosary beads." She says, "Are you doing something weird over there?"
Well, Tony, if you and I lived in California, which we do, we might speculate that there's almost some kind of psychic connection between mother and child, that they pick up on these kinds of shifts in the other so quickly.
Yeah, if we lived in California, we'd start formulating some theory here.
Yeah, right. Now, I know a number of my listeners are interested in hypnosis and probably want to hear more about it. So maybe you can talk a little bit. I gather that you use the hypnotic state to kind of recreate the early circumstance for people. Take us through that a little bit.
In these particular cases, working with mothers, they are so entranced by the whole concept of developing a better relationship with their child that it's real easy to get them into hypnosis. And the idea of bringing them back to the birth of their child is not that hard to do. As you were telling me when you trained me in how to do hypnosis, you can get a person into a hypnotic state, and through the use of idiomotor signals, a person can achieve a lot of hypnotic phenomena without going into a very deep trance. And just by a light state of hypnosis, a person can have access to information and to emotional and behavioral changes. What we do is we lightly hypnotize a mother, and we have her go back to the things around the birth of her child that were bothering her, and we say, "Why don't you just clean up that stuff and remove it from your heart?" And when that's accomplished, your index finger will start floating. And you don't have to put a person into a very deep hypnotic state. It might only take a minute to tell them to close their eyes and go inside and go back to the events around the birth of their child. And within a short period of time, their index finger will start floating involuntarily. And then you say, "Good, now go over to this other thing that was bothering you and clean that up as well." And that'll happen. Their index finger will float again. And then you say, "Now, anything else in there that's got to get cleaned up, just go ahead and do it. With instructions that are that wide, just go in and clean up anything else.
Interesting.
And as you taught me, the unconscious mind can do some remarkable things without specific directions. Once they get into that warehouse of abilities, there's no limit to what they can do.
That's really great. You know, I was thinking of you in this approach, particularly after I read your article in the Family Therapy volume, in which you talk about a case. I don't have it in front of me. You talk about a case, I think, working with a... I think it was working... I've forgotten the details of it. But
yeah, it was a mother whose child had a child that she didn't get along with, just rubbed her the wrong way.
Okay.
And she had all kinds of physical problems around the time of the birth of that baby.
Okay. Well, I heard from a listener, and the listener may recognize this, but I'm not going to give anything away. But I heard from a listener who had a very unpleasant experience with her own natural birth parents, and later in life was able to find another set of older adults who really cared for her, and she cared for them. And yet at some level, she still felt or continues to feel unbonded to her natural parents, and not as fully bonded, I guess, if I understood it correctly, to her adoptive parents as she'd like to feel. And I just have the feeling, having read what you've written and listened to what you said, that maybe she could benefit from a hypnotic session such as you're describing.
I think that it's possible for her to feel even more bonded to her adopted parents and maybe even to her mother. And the issue becomes feeling that bond right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. To go back to that state in active imagination of a light hypnotic trance.
That's it.
And to really have that experience.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, now maybe you could talk a little bit about EMDR, because I'm not sure all my audience would know what EMDR is and how it works. I know that EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing. Maybe you can say a little bit about it.
EMDR is the, in my opinion, biggest discovery that has hit the psychological field in 50 years.
Wow.
Everybody who works where I'm working is compelled to get trained in EMDR. It is such a powerful tool that for a psychologist, I'm real judgmental about this, for a psychologist to not know EMDR and intentionally not learn it is like a physician deciding that he doesn't want to use erythromycin. It is such a it's a well-proven technique, especially for the treatment of trauma. And the way it works, as you know, David, is you have a person who went through some trauma think about that traumatic event while he moves his eyes back and forth following the fingers of the therapist or some kind of a bobble, just moves his eyes back and forth. And during the course of that, the emotional impact of the traumatic event leaves. I first got interested in it by hearing a tape of an EMDR course, and there was a fellow who was a train engineer who gave a testimony. He said, I crushed a car full of a family when I was driving my train, and for 20 years, I see the faces of that family and get a knot in my stomach, and it's ruined my life. And I've tried everything to get over it. I've tried medication, I've tried relaxation, I've tried yoga. He said, I even tried hypnosis, and nothing would get rid of it. He says, with one session with EMDR, I got rid of it, and it no longer bothers me. Isn't that powerful?
Yes, I'll say. My goodness. Wow. So when would you decide to use hypnosis versus EMDR? How would you make that decision?
That's a great question. I use hypnosis all the time unless I can't hypnotize them, and then I go to EMDR.
Okay.
That's my rule of thumb.
Okay, great. Now, you've gone on to create something called Asthma Busters, and you've got an Asthma Busters website. Feel free to give out that URL and tell us what you're up to there.
It's asthmabusters.org, asthma-busters.org. And what it is a website that describes the process of helping kids with asthma by bonding them to their mothers. And it's got some information on there about what kinds of things indicate a mother was not bonded to her child. And then it gives a couple of references and a survey where they can mail it in and find out whether or not this therapy might be helpful. And what we want to do is get this information around the country and set up some asthma busters around the country. The treatment is so quick and so effective that I just I can't imagine not trying to get it out there.
Yeah, what would be the typical length of treatment in working with asthmatics?
Well, getting the information would probably take one session. Doing the therapy would take one or two more sessions, although the majority of people that we've worked with, we only take one or two sessions for the whole thing.
Amazing. And what sort of success rate are you seeing? Are you doing any kind of follow-up so you know what kind of successes you're getting?
Well, we've done two pilot studies, and the success rate is between 80 and 90%.
That's pretty remarkable.
In the last study that we did, there were 10 children who were taking medication. 8 of them no longer needed medication, and the other 2 were able to decrease their medication.
Okay. And I believe that's a sort of an advanced copy of a book that you sent me, that long word file. You have a book coming out?
Well, I've written a book, but I don't know if it's going to get published. It's called The Mother and Child Reunion. And it talks about maternal infant bonding and the cases that were successful with in rebonding the mothers to their children. And then we talk a little bit about our asthma stuff.
Yeah, it's great. You definitely should get it published, and maybe the best way to go is to self-publish and initially just sell it from your Asthma Busters website. And then as it spreads and grows, as I suspect it will, then some publisher might want to pick it up.
That's a good idea. I'll talk with you more about this after we're done.
Yeah, good. And so what are your plans for the future? Where do you see all this going?
You know, I've been a psychologist, as you have, for 35-plus years. And I work over at a little clinic out in our neck of the woods called Russian River Counselors. And we see the local folks out here and children and families. And what I want to do in the future is spend a whole bunch more time on the asthma project. When you're a psychologist for a long time, you look back and you say, what have I contributed to the field?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't contributed much to the field outside of seeing, a bunch of patients. I haven't contributed much to the field except for this maternal infant bonding repair and its connection with asthma. And so I want to devote the next part of my career to this.
Yes. Yes. Well, that sounds like a good plan, like a good mission.
Sure. Appreciate the opportunity to get this out on the airwaves.
Yeah. This is maybe a beginning of making it more widely known. So as we wind it up here, is there anything that I've missed that maybe you wanted to have a chance to say? Or any last words that you'd like to leave people with?
Yeah, I really want to hammer the point that when bonding has not occurred, it's not the It's not the fault of the mother. And that it really is, most of the time, an accidental occurrence, and that it's repairable. That's the part that that I really want to emphasize, that without much ado, the mother's intent to be connected with her child is so strong that if the impediments are erased from her heart, she will automatically slap onto the kid and the two of them will be bonded.
That's such a wonderful, strong message to close with. Dr. Tony Madrid, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David Van Nuys.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Tony Madrid. You probably noticed Tony's references to having learned hypnosis years back from me. I think we were both relatively young professionals at the time, in our early 30s. I had had a long-standing interest in hypnosis and had even managed to focus on it for my doctoral dissertation. As Tony mentioned, when I came to Sonoma State, I was about the only person in the area to have expertise using hypnosis. And I was particularly interested in the writings of Milton Erickson, an American psychiatrist who developed an amazing repertoire of indirect techniques. If you didn't catch my interview with Bill O'Hanlon in Shrink Wrap Radio number 50, we spoke a lot about Erickson in that interview, and you definitely want to go back and listen to that one. So getting back to my early days in Sonoma County, I was really flattered when I was approached by this other psychologist, Tony Madrid, whom I didn't know at the time, and he was offering to actually pay me to share my knowledge. I have to say it was one of the most exciting teaching experiences of my career. Since I was being paid by a peer, I wanted to make sure I was providing good content, so I was really on my toes. And as I recall, I demonstrated various techniques with Tony as the subject, which was a great way for him to learn from the inside out, so to speak. The thing that made this exchange so exciting is that Tony was like a sponge. He just soaked up everything I had to offer. He pulled things out of me that I didn't even know I knew. I heard myself articulating principles that I'd never spelled out before. So in a way, the teaching process was one of discovery for me, as I heard myself spelling out ideas and principles I didn't even know I knew. I think my own effectiveness as a hypnotherapist was hampered by my graduate training in what I call the Academy of Doubt. Academic psychology teaches you to doubt and challenge everything. So while knowing all the hypnotic lore, there was part of me that was questioning various pieces of it. Tony, on the other hand, accepted everything I said as gospel truth and immediately set about using it in his work with full conviction, and he was getting great results. This confirms my belief that hypnotherapy and therapy generally is more of a healing art than a science, and that it bears a strong relationship to shamanism. What I'm getting at here is that I think that healing is most likely to occur when healer and client work within a mutual and passionately held belief system. As I recall, Tony and I were going to write a book together. Then I got an opportunity to be an exchange professor at the University of New Hampshire, and I ended up staying there for 2 years. And so we didn't write that book. And when I returned after 2 years, I discovered that Tony had gone on to create an Erickson Institute in Santa Rosa, and that he had trained a number of other hypnotherapists and created a thriving center for Ericksonian hypnotherapy. Somehow we were both so caught up in our own career directions that we did not see each other or have any contact until the phone interview that you just listened to here. However, I think we still both have very warm feelings for each other, and I'm hoping we'll get together for lunch or something else. As a matter of fact, after the interview, he invited me to come out and visit his new center out in the Russian River area. and I'm looking forward to our long overdue reunion.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
We got 4 new positive reviews on iTunes. I've heard from 2 of those folks and will be sending out books to them. These are books that are generally worth around $30 or more. Plus, I'm paying postage, so it's a great deal for you. If you do post a review on iTunes, be sure to send me a copy of the review and your mailing address so I can send you a book. I'm feeling like I've really been getting on top of my sound issues. I've really been enjoying my new Aphex Master Voice Channel 230. And one thing that I've noticed is that as I was listening back to this podcast and some of the earlier ones, is that I'm very aware of my breathing and hearing me breathing. I'm wondering if that's distracting at all to you. There is a sort of a gate control that I have on this unit, and I've just turned it up to where my breathing is not going to be quite so noticeable, and it'll create a silence. Just let me know whether or not that's been an issue for you or not. Maybe it sounds more artificial to not have the breathing in there. I'm not sure. And then the other sound advance is I got this pair of Shure WH-20 headset microphones that I'm really looking forward to using for my next in-person interview. I think it's going to work out a lot better than what I've used in the past. So really looking forward to trying those babies out. You might recall my mentioning that I put up a promo for Shrink Wrap Radio on YouTube. And you can see that by just doing a search on the 3 words Shrink Wrap Radio on YouTube. And you can see it there. Well, Cody Lapid, a frequent contributor to this show, not only went there, but she wrote a nice comment that she posted there. And she said, instead of sending her a book, what she would really appreciate is if I made an announcement here about a book that she has available on the internet. And so I definitely want to do that. And she's written a children's book called The Enchanted Garden. You can get the book for a low price of $15.73 if you want the paperback version, or you can download it for $3.50. Take a look at it. It's at www.lulu.com, that's L-U-L-U, lulu.com/content/123-3814. Let me remind you that you can find the first 44 shows of this series on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com by going to the archive section there. It's been a while since we've had any new additions to our Frapper map. You'll find a link to the Shrink Wrap Radio Frapper map on our website, so be sure to add yourself if you're not there yet. And finally, I want to recommend that we are sponsored by Podshow. They have a fine lineup of podcasts, and you can subscribe to the show there. And they also bring us the sponsorship of GoDaddy.com, where you can get a domain name, get a 10% discount by using our checkout code of SHRINK3.
In the beginning came the earth, atmosphere, and the elements.
And earth bore its fruit.
In time, earth evolved, bringing with it higher life forms.
But ironically, The term mankind was all too often an oxymoron.
And so mankind looked elsewhere for knowledge, truth, justice, wisdom, and enlightenment.
And in the process, modern communications and machines were born. Enlightened psychologists like Dr. Dave focus on domains like business psychology,
consciousness,
depth psychology,
developmental psychology,
the mind-body experience,
parapsychology,
personal growth,
communication through podcasts,
psychology and the arts,
psychopathology,
psychotherapy,
research psychology,
social issues,
and spirituality.
From your friends at bridgehands.com, Dr. Dave, we thank you for your humanistic, transpersonal, and existential approach to psychology. Congratulations on your awesome podcast.
Hello, Dr. Dave. It's Michael Nistler here. As my robotic friend said, kudos to you, and please keep those podcasts coming. We're all crazy about you. In fact, let's have Michelle Featherstone sing it out.
Sweet, sweet baby, I go crazy.
Happy trails to you, Dr. David, until we meet again.
Thank you, Michael Nistler, for that very book-worthy audio submission. I love it. It turns out that Michael lives in a town not far from me, and he's offered to help me figure out how to order some t-shirts from Cafe Press. So keep your eye out for that. Also, Michael is a podcaster. And if you play Bridge, you'll definitely want to check out his podcast at bridgehands.com. So now we'll turn to our emails, and the first comes in the form of an audio question. So let's take a listen.
Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm one of your longtime listeners, and I seem to be on the horns of a dilemma. The question is, what is the value of therapy versus medical treatment? I'm in the middle of a conflict between my therapist and my physician over how I should be treated, and I don't know who to listen to anymore. Is it time for a third party to step in for mediation? I don't know what to do. It seems like a mild case of depression to me, but medication on one side, an organic cause on the other, and I can't make these two people speak to one another. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm loath to give out psychological advice on this show, and there are a lot of details that you've left out, but I'll plunge ahead and share my top-of-mind considerations. You refer to the medical person as a physician, but you don't say whether or not that person is a psychiatrist. If the physician is not a psychiatrist, then I personally might have some questions as to their expertise in relation to psychotropic medications and their knowledge about psychotherapy. Another consideration that comes to mind is that your own assessment of your condition is one of mild depression. I assume that means you're not feeling suicidal. If you were feeling suicidal, then I could see that a psychiatrist might want the relatively quick intervention that medication might seem to offer. If you're not suicidal, however, then I'd think you have time to give psychotherapy a solid try. I'm not a physician, and I'm not qualified to give medical advice. At the same time, it's common knowledge that all medications have side effects, and those side effects can vary widely from person to person. And there's a considerable body of evidence supporting the effectiveness of psychotherapy in the treatment of depression. So, if it were me, I'd rather not take the risk of unknown side effects resulting from medication, and I'd seek out a therapist who has a good track record of working with people suffering from depression. And, if it were me, I might be tempted to change either therapist and/or physician so that I'd have two professionals who were willing to talk to each other and who would get on the same page. but I can't offer advice, and that's just me. Some time back, listener Elaine wrote me to suggest that I do some shows consisting of interviews with listeners. I can't seem to find the original email from Elaine, but here's what she says in one of her follow-up emails to me on this subject. She writes, "My thought were episodes with an individual listener, the same as you currently provide with other professionals in the field, provided, of course, that there are listeners who would enjoy doing this. If not a full episode, then perhaps short ones that tag on to the end of a regular episode. Perhaps these would be called Ask Dr. Dave. This idea would enroll your listeners on a one-on-one basis in discussion about subjects and would be sent out to the rest of us as either an individual podcast or short podcasts that are tagged on to some sort of some of your regular episodes that would fill in the space if the regular episode is not long enough to fill up an entire hour." Well, that hasn't been a problem of late, as this one will show. Elaine, I think I'm still missing something in what you're asking for here. Actually, I sort of think I've done a version of what you're requesting. There have been a number of shows in which I have interviewed a listener who turned out to have some psychological expertise or something that I thought would be of interest to the Shrink Wrap Radio audience. For example, the recent show number 102 with On the Mon on love, and number 106 with the husband and wife team of Sarah and Alan Zeldman on coaching versus psychotherapy. And also going way back, I'm remembering number 32, my interview with a listener in Canada, Jennifer Linton, on healing through art. And there are other examples that I could cite. Perhaps, though, what you mean is a more open-ended sort of contact where the listener would not necessarily have expertise but just want to ask me some questions or discuss an issue. Well, that's what I have in mind to experiment with using a live call-in format using Blog Talk Radio, and I'm still planning to do that, so stay tuned. Next, we hear from Susie, who created and moderates the Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club on Facebook, and you'll find a link to that on the website. Susie writes in response to a question that I had asked about whether it was appropriate to list it under the category of philosophy. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave, I was just listening to your latest podcast and figured it was about time I sent you an email, as it has been a while. First, though, about the Facebook interests. Unfortunately, psychology was not available on the pull-down menu, so I struggled between philosophy, self-help, and religion, and spirituality. I felt that of those three choices, philosophy was the best. What do you think?" It is a tough choice. I think I would have chosen self-help, though. That would be my thought. She goes on to say, "Second, I thought that the Facebook message board would be a great place for people to do some group dream analysis. Maybe you could mention this on your next show." Hey, that is a good idea. So I'm mentioning it right now. Go there right now and share a dream. I have already posted this suggestion. You can find it under the discussion board heading. Third, I just wanted to reply to Michael's protest about using the rap music theme song. Although I agree much of the rap music around has a very negative connotation, rap music has a positive side to it as well. I won't ramble on about specific examples. A quick Google search may yield many examples if you're interested. But rap music is merely a style of music and a way to deliver a message, and sometimes that message is bad, sometimes good, but it's not the style that is bad. There are lots of other styles of music that deliver equally bad messages. Michael's comment reminded me of something my grandpa would have said to my dad in 1960. Not that evil rock and roll again. Okay, now that I've got that out of the way, what I really wanted to email you about, I just wanted to express how much I appreciate your shows and the profound effect they've had on my life. Today I was walking in the rain, and I said to myself, bad day, as in bad weather, and I thought, no, it's not a bad day. It's a beautiful day, and I felt so happy to be able to be outside and enjoy the day no matter what the weather. A little further along my walk, I was walking through Stanley Park, which you must see when you come to Vancouver. She wrote this before my recent trip to Vancouver, and I did get to see Stanley Park, and it's beautiful. She says, there was a marathon, and lots of people were around me, and I was just walking through the grass and kicking some red leaves as I listened to you read the mailbag. I suddenly felt a calmness come over me, and I realized there was nowhere I would rather be than just in that park kicking those leaves and listening to your podcast. I did not feel alone or stressed or angry or sad. I just felt content. It was so nice to feel this way because I recently broke up with my boyfriend, and I've been feeling a whole range of thoughts going from one extreme to another, so it was so nice to just be happy in the moment. I've attached a picture of Stanley Park so you can picture where I was. Once again, thank you so much for each and every podcast you've put out, Susie. Susie, sorry to hear about that breakup. I'm sure there is another love on its way, and I'm so glad that Shrink Wrap Radio offers some solace to you in times of stress and transition. Okay, I think that better wrap it up for emails for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. And you can leave voice messages on the Shrink Wrap Radio site by clicking on the My Chingo button. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. You can even leave messages there if you're not in the U.S., if you're willing to pay for the long-distance call. Thanks again to my good friend Dr. Tony Madrid for his insights on using hypnosis and EMDR to treat asthma. My next show will feature Dr. Jason Holder, and we'll be talking about adventure-based psychotherapy and counseling. Don't miss it. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.